This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Thrive Inspiring Women, brought to you by Real Communications. I'm your host, Gina McKenzie, and I'll be speaking with inspiring women who are passionate about making a positive impact on our world. I hope you'll be uplifted and motivated by powerful stories of women doing amazing work to transform people's lives. Kathleen Chrisley is New Zealand's first fear-free certified canine massage therapist. Today we're going to learn more about her career path, which was inspired by her love of dogs, along for tips that you can use for creating fit, balanced and fear-free dogs. Thank you so much for being our guest on Thrive today, Kathleen.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up in the career that you're in?
Right. Well, if I go back to when I was 18 and leaving high school, I think I did have an interest even back then in going into veterinary medicine. But it was either veterinary medicine or environmental science. And environmental science at the time had a lot less student loans and more job prospects. So I made the choice back then that I'd do environmental science. So I always had dogs and always had a love of dogs. But as we do, we enter a second career. And my path led me down to looking at complementary therapies for my own dog at the time and realizing that I'd learned so much that it was something I could offer in practice commercially if I did the right training.
And speaking of dogs, you credit an English pointer named Daisy, who you adopted in 2003, as your muse. Can you tell us about that experience?
Yes, because it was very much Daisy and I were on a journey to keep her healthy for as long as possible, which I think most listeners who have pets would understand, that you want to keep them healthy and with you for as long as possible. And Daisy just had one issue after the other over the course of her life with me. So within weeks of adopting her, she was a rehome. I did what a lot of good dog owners think they're doing the right things. And I went out and bought a very good dog food for her, a kibble. And within days, she started getting really red between her paw pads, and she was clearly having a food reaction. And so one of the first things we had to do was work on finding a food that wouldn't trigger her. And then further on into life, after we got her diet sorted, she got terrible poisoning from landscaping that happened on our property. So I told the man that when he was laying a new lawn, I didn't want him to spray. Didn't find out until the lawn started going yellow that he had sprayed. And by then, Daisy had been exposed to a lot of things. And she was having these very odd gut problems and digestive upsets that the vet couldn't put her finger on. And we felt that I felt it was exposure to these toxins in the environment. And then further on in life, right after the Christchurch earthquakes, she let me know she had arthritis because I was walking her a bit more when we couldn't go to work. And that's, again, a very typical presentation where a dog has a higher energy in more exercise for whatever reason. So we started managing her arthritis and together, and then towards the end of her life, she ended up with irritable bowel disease. So we had other issues around diet because she was becoming intolerant, and she went to a fully home-cooked diet towards the end of her life with very novel proteins. So, you know, my friends laugh, but they quite remember the goat and shiitake mushroom casserole that we were making for her at one stage in the slow cooker. And that was because she needed novel proteins and things she hadn't been exposed to.
That casserole just sounds very delicious.
I'm not into goat myself, but she enjoyed it.
So can you tell us more about your business, The Balanced Dog? I'm guessing that your experience with Daisy fed into starting that business.
Yes, very much so. So reflecting on what I was doing with Daisy, I looked into what professional training I could get that would feed into this concept of a practice that was integrative with traditional veterinary care. And I chose dog massage training in the United States for that reason. So Daisy was still with me. It was 2009. And I went over for my first certification in therapeutic massage. I would go on to having qualifications in sports massage and senior canine massage, as well as other behavioral training at another institution as the years went on. But I went specifically to use those techniques on her because she was arthritic. And I knew that she needed extra support. I didn't want to go just the drug route for her arthritis.
And so those sorts of qualifications and trainings, were they only available? They weren't available in New Zealand at that time?
They're still not available in New Zealand. And in some ways, that's a good thing as well for consumers, because the niche aspect of it, you're getting a really solid training program when you go overseas. It's not just learn how to pet dogs, which is a common misconception. It's going over and understanding anatomy and the movement of the dog. And in my case, because I understand that pain presents as behavioral issues as well, I focused on adding the skills around behavior management. Because I didn't want to be a dog trainer, but I need to understand behavior and unravel a dog that's anxious or nervous or reactive because they're in pain.
So there's a lot of science behind what you learned.
Absolutely, absolutely. And much the same way a human massage therapist needs to understand how the body moves and functions, that's the role of a professional school for canines.
In your business, The Balanced Dog, you run massage workshops for dogs and owners, and I'm gathering it's more of an introductory type training that they learn in the beginning. So what do dog owners learn during these lessons, and how do they apply that to their dog?
Right. Well, I designed the workshops because I think we need to be honest. Pet care is expensive, and not everyone's going to be able to hire me on a regular basis. And nor do I want to have my books filled up with just maintenance clients. I want to be able to have the availability for dogs that are coming out of surgeries or starting on their journey of being arthritic or aged or have a behavioral problem. So to encourage dog owners to manage at home, I teach them a head-to-toe massage sequence based on the principle of acupressure. It helps them maintain or manage on a regular basis how the dog's body condition may or may not be changing. And they can also monitor things like lumps and bumps for discussions with their vet. So they can get a certain amount of management of their dog at home before they need to see professional assistance. And I think the more that any of us are in tune with our dog, the better. You pick up body changes that way.
And now thinking about fear and anxiety, what are some of the reasons why dogs become afraid or anxious, and how do you work on resolving these issues?
Okay. So much like people, dogs can end up anxious or stressed from anything that they've had a bad experience from. So the listeners, many who have rescue dogs, are probably going to be familiar with the fact that, say, a dog doesn't like to be touched around the head and they'll cower because they've obviously had a negative experience with someone either hitting them or hitting them with something. In my practice, my interest in fear and anxiety came primarily from the connection between discomfort and pain and how a dog shows that. So dogs are very nonverbal. They're not going to, until they're in extreme pain, vocalize. But they could be snapping at someone in the family who comes close to a sore part of their body, or have developed more of a reinforced behavioral problem because they're so uncomfortable and the family still doesn't realize that there's something physically going on. And that can be anything. It doesn't have to be arthritis, which is more associated with an aging dog. So if we understand canine behavior and understand fear, we can look at how can we get the dog more comfortable and more empowered to signal when they're uncomfortable, for the owner and family to understand, and for us to keep them safe. Because there are cases where dogs have bitten, and they've bitten out of pain, and yet they pay the price for that.
Mm. Yes, that's a really important point, because unfortunately, dogs can't tell us what's wrong.
And that's probably the advantage of hiring me in a lot of cases with a first consultation, because I observe the dog in their own home. I don't use a clinic setting. I practice exclusively in home. So the dog is most comfortable at home, so is the owner, and I can sort of see how they're reacting to each other and interacting. And quite often I'll say, you know, I think your dog is in pain, and here's why. This is what he's doing. And people are like, I never realized. And it's pretty common, actually, because when you live with a creature every day, you don't see those changes the way a fresh set of eyes would.
Yes, so that initial consultation, that leads on to the next question. So you go into someone's home, and what happens during that process, and what kind of treatments might you use or recommend?
When someone books with me for an initial consultation, I first ask them to send me all their dog's health history, their vet records. And I pre-populate my questionnaire, which I've refined over the years for new intakes. And then I go in with questions I know I want to ask based on the dog's history, but also my standard questions around behavior and the environment they're living in and their habits, etc. Then we go out usually for a short walk where I watch the dog's gait, their movement. And sometimes I will film that and play it later on slow motion so that I can really see any ticks or changes in the gait. Then we come home again and we get them up on my massage table and they get a full head-to-toe massage therapy session where I'm, again, touching, feeling, watching their reactions, talking to the owners at the same time with things that come to mind. And I always aim to end an initial session with some sort of game plan discussion of things that I think might work. And there's a tendency when your dog particularly has a major health issue, a lot of owners want to throw everything in the kitchen sink at the dog all at once. And of course, in science, we change one thing at a time and see how it works. So we prioritize what things to introduce first based on the dog's condition. And then we watch and review.
And I can imagine doing everything at once would be overwhelming for the dog, the owner, and you.
Yes, and overwhelming for their budget as well. Because, you know, we could, like, say, look at a supplement and say, you know, your vet's put you on these medications. I think possibly this non-pharmaceutical option might help. And not all dogs need supplements, but this is just an example. But then if they don't really see an improvement, then the owner doesn't have to keep throwing that at the dog. We can try something else. And it's important that we review it all. And remembering, too, that dogs age a lot faster than we do. So a year in our time is many years in their time. And so people, I think, lose track of time. They don't realize how much time is getting away from them. And our health needs change as we get older. So the dog's health needs change over their lifetime as well.
Yes. And now we had a really interesting discussion before about food, dog food, and the history of commercialization of dog food. It would be interesting just to touch on that a little bit and also to talk about the role that the dog's diet plays in their well-being.
Right. Well, again, comparing people with their dogs, that adage that you are what you eat applies to your dog as well as your own health. So the history of dog food, as I was mentioning earlier, comes back to the World War II years. Back then, any sort of commercial dog food would have been a tinned dog food, a sort of jelly meat offcuts, byproducts, etc. But in the war years, the demand for metals meant that there wasn't going to be metals for tinned foods. And the pet industries were really put on notice that they really had to find a shelf-stable product. And those were the very first kibbles. There wasn't dry dog food in a bag before then. And as the years have gone by and we're past the war, just like in any business, the pet businesses have boomed in the last 15 and 20 years, where they are a consumer sector, where you can make a lot of money selling dog foods and treats and things. And so everyone's looking for the newest and best formulation. And we now see, you know, freeze-dried dog foods, baked, extruded dog foods, air-dried, all of those have come about because consumers are looking for the best possible dog food and formulation for their dog.
Do you think in some ways that can be a bit overwhelming for people to decide which one they should use? What's the healthiest? Is it the most expensive? Is it the raw diet? Is it the most natural? What do you advise people to do?
Well, in terms of the confusion, the answer is an absolute yes. So I follow a few Facebook groups. I don't contribute to them, but I follow them. And regularly, someone will say to me, what should I feed my dog? And then 60 people who they don't know with probably no pet experience other than their own weighed in with what they think they should be feeding. And I don't see how that helps the discussion too much. My philosophy on food is a little bit like how I want to live, which is eating fresh ingredients. I eat processed foods just like most listeners will, but I don't live on processed food. And so I don't see why my dog should live on processed food either. So my dogs have always had what I call a hybrid diet. They do have a kibble, which helps with convenience when you're working and you're busy, but they also get home-cooked things and they get fresh food as well and a little bit of raw. And there will be listeners who will say to me, you know, you should be advocating for a 100% raw diet. And I'm not going to do that simply because I know that there are dogs that don't do well on raw or owners can't afford an 100% raw diet. But there are things they can do within any budget, particularly these times, because we've been living through quite a few months now of a very high cost of living. People have to make choices.
Totally agree. And what about treats? We talked before about how treats can be okay, but sometimes they can just go perhaps a bit too far with treats and not realize, a dog owner may not realize cumulatively how many treats they're giving their pet, especially as they get older.
That's right. So the general rule of thumb for calories is 10% of calories per day for a dog should be treats. We like to reward our dogs for all manner of things. A lot of owners go to dog trainers or dog training classes and learn to reward their dogs with food for doing the right thing. And I totally endorse that. Positive reinforcement is the way to go. But there is too much of a good thing. And so you get in the habit of feeding perhaps treats that are too big for the dog, so they get extra calories when they could actually have a very small treat and still be just as happy. As they get older and their metabolism slows down, they don't need as much calories, but they're still getting fed the same. So that's where they can put on weight, and that stresses joints, etc. Quite often I'll say to clients, you know, just weigh out your normal daily portion of your dog's food, like the kibble that you're using, but reserve a few of those chunks for treats. The dog is still going to be very happy to have a treat, but their calorie intake doesn't go up. So treats definitely have their place, and I like treats, so I'm sure my dog does too. It's just a question of moderation.
Could you please share some of your success stories with us?
So success for me is when I sit down with an owner, I ask them about quality of life and what are their goals. And this year, for example, a 15-year-old, 9-month client passed away, but we had kept him with quality of life for 2.5 years. He had had health problems. He had had digestive issues. And the vets had done a very good job. They had a very good relationship with their family vet, but they'd gone as far as they could go with traditional veterinary care. And the vet basically said to them, look, you know, think broader and let me know what you need from me. And so they came to me. It was an adult daughter and her mother who cared for the dog primarily. And I visited them in their home on a regular basis. And we kept this little dog named Tosca going for a good couple of years. And when he passed away earlier this year, you know, both the mom and Tosca's grandmom knew that they were reaching the end of life. They were prepared. They understood what quality of life was, and they realized that he wasn't having it anymore. And as sad as that is, it's supporting those owners through that life journey is very rewarding for me. It can be very stressful, but also very rewarding.
I can imagine. And have you got any stories about any sort of younger dogs that might have come to you with issues that you've been able to resolve?
Yes. So I've had younger dogs come through the practice on a regular basis for a range of things. So I recall a large breed dog who had been hit by a car. He was crossing the road with his mom, and he bore the brunt of the impact, and he developed shoulder issues on the right-hand side. And it was soft tissue. It wasn't easily defined on, say, x-rays. And we went through a fitness program with him, a stretching program, and he resolved very well so that he could start running with his mother again. And the advantage of youth, of course, is that there's a lot more energy in the body to be able to heal itself. If we can point those tissues in the right direction, we can support them and get them back on their feet.
So if someone has a dog at a younger age and they start to notice some things and they can't quite put their finger on it, it's good to come to someone like you earlier on.
Yes, I would definitely recommend a vet check to do an orthopedic exam. But I'd like to emphasize, too, that where I'd really like to grow my business, and I'm encouraging people through the massage workshops as well, is get your dog used to being handled early when there is no problem. Because massaging the tissues, understanding that we can keep those tissues from jamming up and keeping good range of motion in the joints is injury prevention. And I'm going to be focusing increasingly on a fitness approach to wellness so that any dog, whether they're arthritic and having health problems or the perfectly healthy ones, we can focus on giving them fitness for their life stage.
That sounds like a really positive thing for humans and for dogs as well, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, I think if you talk to people in the human healthcare sector, and giving our healthcare sector is under such crisis, the more people can focus on staying well rather than waiting for there's a problem to be fixed, that helps everybody.
Exactly. So how can our listeners connect with you and find out more about the services that you offer?
Well, like most businesses, I have a website, and that's balanceddog.co.nz. I also blog about issues and have done since 2010 on doggymom.com. I'm on Facebook, balanceddognz, and also Instagram, the balanceddognz. And the good old-fashioned phone number is 03354-0298.
Thank you so much, Kathleen, for being on the show today. And it was really interesting. I learned a lot from you today. Thank you.
Thank you. I had fun.
Thanks for joining us today on Thrive Inspiring Women. If you'd like to listen to previous shows, just go to the Plains FM website and type in Thrive. Thanks again for tuning in to Thrive, and join me again next time for more amazing stories from inspirational women who are changing our world.